Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Sukkah is daf Mem Hey. We are in Mem Dalad. I thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf will be learning with Zeichon Nishmas, Lois Lupin Zaltzman. And we begin. The Gemara's discussion yesterday was a discussion about a Rava. There are two mitzvahs of a Rava. There's a mitzvah d'oraisa of a Rava. A mitzvah of d'oraisa of a Rava is done in the Beis HaMikdash, and then there is the minhag of a Rava, which is done outside the Beis HaMikdash. The mitzvah that's done in the Beis HaMikdash is done by the Kohanim. The Kohanim themselves are exclusive to this mitzvah of a Rav in the Beis HaMikdash, presumably, as we saw yesterday, not done by non-Kohanim. What exactly is the mitzvah of a Rav? So first of all, it entails on a Rav. That little I can tell you. Of the Dalet Minim, so the Arava has two mitzvahs attached to it. One mitzvah of Arava is attached to the Dalet Minim, but that's for everybody. And the other mitzvah of Arava is what we're talking about. We're talking about the mitzvah as it pertains to the Beis HaMikdash. It was done every day in the Beis HaMikdash, except for Shabbos, unless Shabbos and the last day of Sukkot overlap. If Shabbos and the last day of Sukkot overlap, so then they're going to do Arava even on that Shabbos. What exactly is done with the Arava? So as we saw in yesterday's Gemara, it's not clear. The two possibilities the Gemara has given us is that it's done by Netila, which means that we take the Arava and we encircle the Mizbeach, and the Mishnah then reported to us that on every day we did one circling of the Mizbeach, and on the seventh day we encircled the Mizbeach seven times. Another possibility is Zakifa. Zakifa just simply means to lean the Arava against the Mizbeach. The Netila itself, described in the Mishnah, that's not talking about the Arava, that's talking about the Lulav. But the mitzvah of Arava only means that we're Zokif. We just simply take it and we lean it against the Mizbeach. Outside the Beit HaMikdash, there is another mitzvah of Arava, which is instituted by the Nevi'im. The degree of institution we'll talk about momentarily, that's coming up in the Gemara that we should have done yesterday, we're going to do momentarily. Outside the Beis HaMikdash, there's an institution or a Navi institution of a Rava. So how many days do we do it outside the Beis HaMikdash? So one. We do it one day outside the Beis HaMikdash. We do it on the seventh day of Sukkot. The Gemara noted yesterday, Lulav, it was instituted to be done 7 days outside the Beis HaMikdash. And meanwhile, a Rava is only instituted for one day. Yesterday, the Gemara asked the question, it doesn't seem fair that the lulav should be done for 7 days and the arava only been done for one day. And the Gemara's answer, Gemara gave a couple of answers, but the answer that the Gemara settled on was that a lulav already is a mitzvah d'oraisa outside the Beis HaMikdash for one day, and so therefore it's an extension, and so therefore it's extended for the next 6 days. Arava, however, there's no mitzvah to be done outside the Beis HaMikdash min haTorah, so therefore the institution was to do it only one day on the seventh day of Sukkot. What if that one day, what if that last day of Sukkot falls on Shabbos? So that we saw was an issue. Yesterday we went over, Bar Heja was the one who comes in from Eretz Yisrael, and he says, well, it never happened. Meaning that the Chachamim manipulated the months so that it would never happen that the seventh day would fall on Shabbos. The Gemara points out, however, other Amoraim disagree. It's a strange machlokas, as we pointed out yesterday. Ravin disagreed. Ravin said no, that the Hoshana Rabbah, what we call Hoshana Rabbah, the seventh day of Sukkot, does in fact fall out on Shabbos. And Ravin said, and we don't take the Arava. So that was the discussion that we had yesterday. Good. That's just a quick synopsis of all that we saw up until this point in time. Amar Reish Lakish. Now, we did this yesterday, just quickly to review. We're in Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. We're behind. We're in Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, and we're going to start again from the words Amar Reish Lakish. I know I did this quickly yesterday. Reish Lakish now is going to describe the mitzvah of Rav as it pertains to the Beis HaMikdash. Kohanim Balei Mumim Nechnas Min Al Ulam Lizbech Kedei Latzeis Ba Rava. So Kohanim Balei Mumim are going into the area of the Azara, and not just into the area of Azara, but as we pointed out yesterday, really into the interior area of the Azara. They wouldn't just walk into the entrance. Remember, this is upside down, so this is east and that's west. So they wouldn't just come in from the east, but they would go all the way to this area between the Mizbeach and the Ulam. The Ulam was the antechamber to the actual Beit HaMikdash. That's the area they would go to. Now, they're Balei Mumim. That means they're blemished. They have physical blemishes. They can't do the Avoda. So the truth of the matter is that they shouldn't be there. Reish Lakish says, yeah, that's true. For the Avoda, they shouldn't be there. But for Rava, they were there. So Amalei Rav Yochanan, so Rav Yochanan says to his brother-in-law, Mi Amra, who said that? So Mi Amra, so Reish Lakish was kind of like taken back by the question, what do you mean, who said that? Ha Ihu Amar, Rav Yochanan, you said that. Amra, Vasi Amar, Rav Yochanan, Mishum, Rav Nechunya, Ben Ish, Bikas, Beis Charas, and Esen, and Tiyas, Rav, and Nisil, Chamayim, Halacha, Moshe, Mitzinai. The three halachas that were lumped together, they seemingly aren't related. Well, two of them are. Two of them have to do with Sukkos. But one has to do with the 10 saplings right before the Shemitah year, where the 1 month before Shemitah, you could still work with the 10 saplings. And then the two other halacha Moshe Mesina is halacha Moshe Mesina, meaning not recorded in the Torah, but min ha-Torah. The two other halacha Moshe Mesina is Nisa Chamayim, the pouring of the water every day in the Beis HaMikdash on the southwest corner of the Mizbeach, and Arava. So they are halacha Moshe Mesina. So Reish Lakish says to Rav Yochanan, what are you talking about? Who said it? You said it. So Ela mi amra b'netila, dema b'zkifa. So Rav Yochanan says, yeah, of course there's a mitzvah of a Rava. But look, first of all, how do you know it's netila? How do you know the mitzvah entails that you pick it up? Maybe the mitzvah is just simply zokef to lean it against the mizbech. Mi amra b'bali mumim, dema b'tmimim. And further, and by the way, and Rashi points out, and so what? So if the mitzvah is just the kifa, so I don't need a whole bunch of kohanim to go into the Azara. If the mitzvah is just the kifa, one, two, three kohanim, just simply leaning the arav against the mizbeach. Netila, however, if it were netila, so then I would need a bunch of kohanim, as many kohanim as possible to take it around. So the first point Rav Yochanan says to Reish Lakish is, you think the mitzvah is netila? Maybe not. Maybe the mitzvah is the kifa. And furthermore, mi'amri b'bali mumim, dema b'tzmimim. And another point to consider is, who told you bali mumim are going in? Maybe it's only those kohanim that are not blemished. Okay, so to put it simply, there is the mitzvah of harava, but quite frankly, we're unsure, meaning we in this room, the Amoraim themselves were unsure exactly what this mitzvah entailed. Itmar Rav Yochanan v'Yeshua ben Levi. Okay, and here we go. And now the Gemara is going to have a discussion regarding the source of the mitzvah of harava. Now, the source of the mitzvah of harava is a funny issue, considering that we just said repeatedly, again and again, it's halacha Moshe Mesinai. So stay tuned, because the punchline is going to be, I'll give it away now, otherwise it's kind of hard to understand how the Gemara is even entertaining or addressing this issue. The punchline is going to be is that the institution is for the mitzvah of harava outside the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that's the punchline. But let's go with the Gemara. Edmar Rav Yochanan Rav Yeshua Ben Levi. The Gemara brings down a machlokas between the Amoraim. Chad Amar Arava Yisod Nevi'im. So one says that the mitzvah of Arava is Yisod Nevi'im. Yisod Nevi'im, take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes Yisod, on the Divra Amaspa Yisod Nevi'im. Takanas Nevi'im Achronim. This is instituted by the later prophets, Chag Zechariah Malachi. These are the last Nevi'im of the Jewish people, living at the beginning of Beit Sheni. They were members of the Anshe Knesset HaGedola, members of the Great Assembly, and they're the ones who instituted it. That's one possibility. And the other opinion is that it's not Yesod Nevi'im, but it's Minag Nevi'im. Minag, again, let's take a look at Rashi. Hinhigu es ha'am. It was a custom. V'lo tikno lahem. And it wasn't an institution. And pray tell, what's the difference? Meaning it's, okay, custom, yesod, takana, what's the difference? Rashi says. Now Rashi knows this because, quite frankly, the Gemara later on will say this. V'nafka mina delo bai bracha. The nafka mina would be, shall we make a bracha? The lamemar v'tzivanu. Are we entitled to make a bracha? In every bracha, we have the words, asher kedishanam b'mitzvah sav v'tzivanu. Hashem, you commanded us. Now, if it was Yisod Nevi'im, so that means the rabbis instituted. So God, you commanded. God, you commanded? Yeah. You commanded the Chachamim and invested into them the authority to institute. So if it were a Yisod Nevi'im, we could make a bracha. And we can even say the words, Asher Kedishanam B'Mitzvosav V'Tzivanu, because you commanded us to listen to the Chachamim. But if it's just a minhag, so then we're not going to make a bracha. We don't make a bracha on a minhag. Okay, stay tuned. More to discuss about that later on. So, Tistayim de Rav Yochanan, back to the Gemara. Tistayim de Rav Yochanan Udami Yisod Nevi'im. Let us conclude that Rav Yochanan is of the opinion that's Yisod Nevi'im. How do I know that? Dam Rabbi Abam, Rav Yochanan, a Rav Yisod Nevi'im who? Tistayim. The proof is pretty solid, considering the fact that Rav Yochanan actually says Yisod Nevi'im. Usually, we read a statement, we make an inference, debatable, nothing to debate over here. Rabbi Yochanan says, Yisod Nevi'im. Okay. So, Amalei Rav Zera L'Rabbi Abba U'Mi'amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. Now the Gemara is confused, because now Rabbi Yochanan says it's Yisod Nevi'im. Yisod Nevi'im, instituted by the late Nevi'im, what are we talking about? Didn't we have Rav Yochanan say, and I think we've said this now in our perek. In our perek, I think we said it three times. I think in the Masechta we said it over about four times. Either way, however good my numbers are, Rav Yochanan says, Halacha Moshe B'Sinai. So what do you mean, Yisod Nevi'im? There's a big difference. It's approximately, I was going to say 1,000-year difference? Yeah. Approximately one millennia difference between being Halacha Moshe M'Sinai, which means given up high from Kadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe, or Yisod Nevi'im, Chag Zecharia Malachi, they're at the end of the first temple, beginning of the second temple. So that's about 1,000 years, approximately. Okay? That's a big difference. So Yishtomim Kishar Chada. Oh boy, what a question. He was quiet. Meaning, a powerful question. Didn't know what to answer. So the Amar, so the first attempted answer of the Gemara is Shachachum v'chazur v'yastum. It was a halach l'Moshe M'Sinai. It was forgotten. And then it was later reinstituted. Reminded, reinstituted. Occasionally we do find in the Gemara where halachas were lost and then recovered. Recovered halachas. How do you recover a halacha? Okay, good question. The best example. That's a good example that comes to my head, comes to my mind right now is where the Karban Pesach was brought. It's brought on Erev Pesach. Erev Pesach fell out in the Shabbos, and they forgot how to carry the animal that walked to the Beis Hamikdash. They forgot how to carry the knife to the Beis Hamikdash, and nobody knew it. And who was it who was able to recover that halacha? So Hillel. Hillel comes in from Bavel, and Hillel reminds him what the halacha was. So, okay. So maybe recovery comes from, you know, it's outsourced from, in that particular case, Hillel, who was living out in Bavel. Your question is better than my answer, but okay. Shachem v'chazum v'yazdum. Umi amar Rav Yochanan hachi v'amar Rav Yochanan dachun amri dalhon hi. So the Gemara says, no, that's hard to imagine that this particular halacha was lost and needed to be recovered. Rav Yochanan made the statement that Dalchon, I'm Rav Yochanan, Dalchon Amre Dalhoni. I said it was ours, but meanwhile it's yours. Right? A cryptic statement of Rav Yochanan. What does that mean? So take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes the following. Rashi writes, "V'amar Rav Yochanan Dachon Ami Dahoni Rav Kahana Hayami Tamide Rav." So Rashi over here gives us the background information so that we can understand this very cryptic statement of Rav Yochanan. We start off with a story with Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana was a student of Rav. Vayacharif Maod. Now Rav Kahana was a fantastic Talmud Chacham. I mean, we could say that about any Amora, but Rashi says it, Charif Maod, Ubaruch L'Eretz Yisrael. Now this is it's amazing. When we get to the end of Baba Kama, I know that's sometimes away from now in Daf Yomi terminology, but when we get to the end of Baba Kama, it's just an incredible story where Rav Kahana had to kill somebody. Somebody in Bava was a Malshin. He was a snitch, and Rav Kahana killed him. Now, mind you, Rav Kahana lived in Bava after the destruction of the Second Temple. Capital punishment is usually not meted out. And I say usually, I mean can't. Okay? But anyway, Ubaruch L'Eretz Yisrael, and because he killed somebody, so now he was in trouble. So what did he do? He fled. Fled the premises. He left Bavel and he went to Eretz Yisrael. Lefnei Rav Yochanan, Machmas Mardin, Shaharu Glad Damecha, Kedamina Perek Basu to Baba Kama. And Rashi says, get to the end of Baba Kama, you'll see the entire story in Stein. But anyway, the point is as follows. Rav Kahana started his life in Bavel, and then for reasons which we just touched on, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. V'hutzrach lo Rav Yochanan l'kamas feikos. Now Rav Yochanan was unsure about a number of things, and now Rav Yochanan had the opportunity to ask Rav Kahana. Remember, Rav Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael, so now he asks Rav Kahana. V'haya omer Rav Yochanan lived in Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Kahana knew everything, every question, every suffix that Rav Yochanan had. He turned to Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana said, oh yeah, well, I know that. And Rav Kahana had unbelievable clarity of everything. So and after Rav Yochanan saw that, Rav Yochanan said to the people in Eretz Yisrael, you know what I just came to realize? They're good. Those Babylonians really kept the Torah extraordinarily well. And Rav Yochanan says, and I had to rethink everything, because, I'll read the Rashi, Savra hayiti shatorah shalachem shelo giliti me'artzachem. Rav Yochanan said, I thought we had the Torah. Meaning, think about it, we live in Israel. We have the unbroken chain, the Masorah, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. I thought we had everything. Ve'yahaylachem tiref adas. And out there in Bavel, no, there's no way they know Torah. Not to the same degree that we do. They had tiref adas. They were exiled to Bavel, and they're persecuted in Bavel. Like, no way. And meanwhile, avarit yishayashu b'nei Bavel, sh'afa pishagalu, amdalahem chachmas acharash v'hamazgir, shagalim yichanya. And meanwhile, when exiled, Yechanya, right? You remember that name? You heard that name in the Megillah. One of the last kings of the First Temple period. So he was exiled. Right? Exile for that First Temple was like a process. Yechanya was one of the earlier stages in the process. But anyway, together with Yechanya, who was exiled with him? All the Talmidei Chachamim. Ki dechsev, the Rashi quotes a pasuk from Malachim Beis. Hakol giborim osei melchama. That who went out together with Yechanya? The Giborim, the warriors. But warriors over here, not the physical warriors, but rather the Talmidei Chachamim. V'tanya b'seder olam. And then Rashi quotes Seder olam. V'chima gvura osim b'nei adam nesunim b'shal shalosh shal barzel. Right? Strange picture. Giborim, who were taken out in chains. So Giborim over here does not mean actual soldiers, warriors. It means Talmidei Chachamim. So Rav Yochanan came to the realization they didn't forget anything, those Babylonians. So now the Gemara says, concerning the fact that Rav Yochanan had that kind of revelation, so this suggestion of our Gemara right now does not seem to work out. Again, Rav Yochanan says that the Arav is Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. Rav Yochanan also says that Arav is Yisod Nevi'im, instituted by the later prophets. How could that be? So the attempted answer of the Gemara is, well, they forgot it. It's a hard answer. It's a difficult answer. Rav Yochanan realized that in Bavel they didn't forget anything. So, Salokasha, the Gemara says, it is not difficult, meaning let's come up to a new resolution. Kam b'mikdash makam b'gvulin. And so therefore the Gemara answers, and this is the punchline, and I told you this was coming, that no, the halach l'moshe m'sinai, that's in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, there's a mitzvah da'araisa, not recorded in the Torah, halach l'moshe m'sinai, that we take a rava. We meaning the Jewish people, but we meaning the Kohanim. Kohanim take a rava. That's a rava min haTorah. And then gvulin. And then, outside the Beis HaMikdash, where there's no mitzvah da'araisa to take a rava, but nevertheless was instituted. Who instituted it? So now we're going to take the other statement to Rav Yochanan, instituted by the later Nevi'im. Amar Rabbi Ami, Arava Tzricha Shir. Okay, so now we know that we have a mitzvah of Arava. And there are two layers of the mitzvah. The one layer is mitzvah d'Araisa, and the other layer is a mitzvah d'Rabbanan. Okay, but we have to take Arava. Now, Arava requires a requisite shir. It needs an amount. Okay? Be nice if we knew what the amount was. Stay tuned. The mitzvah of a rava is that we take the rava by itself, independent of the lulav. And it's not going to work if you use the rava of the lulav. Statement number two and statement number three seem to be the same statement. To which the Gemara asks, yeah, so once I have statement number two, isn't statement number three superfluous? To which the Gemara responds, yeah, I might have thought like this. Statement number two only means that I can't pick up the lulav once and then get two checks on my checklist. One check for the mitzvah of lulav and then a separate check for the mitzvah of arava. But let's say I do the following. Pick the lulav up, and I say lulav, I mean the dal minim. Pick the lulav up, put it down. Pick it up again. And maybe now what I could do is I can give myself two checks. One check for the mitzvah of lulav, and a second check for the mitzvah of arava. Chamash Malan. That's what I get from statement number three. That's not going to work. In order to do it, in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Arava, so what you need to do is you need to separate the Arava from the Lulav and use the Arava by itself. Or just simply have separate set of Aravas. Now it happens to be that one Amora disagrees and he says no, that you can in fact use the Arava that's connected to your Lulav. Okay, so fine. The mitzvah of Arava requires that we have the Arava. According to the first Amora, the Arava has to be self-standing, not the ones attached to the Lulav. And according to the second opinion, no, the ones in the Lulav work even as they're attached, connected to the Lulav. The kama shi'urah. Okay, what's the shi'ur for a rava? I'm Rav Nachman, gimel bade alin lachin. So Rav Nachman says three stalks. Rav Sheshet Amar afilo ale echad uvad echad. One stalk, one leaf. Now the Gemara initially doesn't understand that. Ale echad uvad echad, what does that mean? So Rashi points out, ale means a leaf, bad means a stem. So alei echad ubad echad sagadacha, meaning is it either or? So elaim afilo alei echad bivad echad. So the Gemara says one stem and with one leaf. Okay, that's all you need. So all you need is not that exciting. It is exciting. It's a mitzvah, but in terms of what the shear is, so the shear is all you need is one with one leaf connected to it. I'm sure you've noticed that we have a minhag of taking five. Okay, that's our minhag. Our minhag, if I'm not mistaken, I think that was instituted by the Arizal. The Arizal was the one who said five, so therefore five. A lot of Kabbalistic influence has entered into the Hoshana Rabbah and into the Arava. So even though the Gemara has one conclusion, but obviously over the years the minhag has evolved. Amar Aibu. Oh, by the way, did you notice the Gemara doesn't mention anything about the length of the Arava? Meaning when it came to the Arava as it pertains to the Lulav, so it mentions length, right? The Arava has to be three tefachim long. Here, however, it doesn't mention anything regarding the length. Rashi writes the following. Rashi divra maschel ela, I'm sorry, alei echad bevad echad, one stem with one leaf, bad echad ubo alei echad vidayo. So Rashi writes, okay, so one stem with one leaf and that would be enough. V'chi amrin la'al gimel tfachim. And yes, Rashi points out, we did mention gimel tfachim, but lagabe lulav hu damrinan. Yes, but that's regarding the lulav. Shetei arava arucha shosha tfachim. Aval arava shiyu makifam ba bifnei atzma. But the Arava that's self-standing, meaning the one that's used for the mitzvah of Arava, kol dehu sagi. Rashi's opinion is that it's kol dehu. There is no length requirement. The hashta nagu lahavi morbios anafim aruchim. But Rashi says, okay, so that's the base requirement. So base requirement for this mitzvah of Arava is one stem, one leaf, and no length. We have one stem, one leaf, no length requirement. That's the base requirement. Rashi says our practice, now Rashi is describing what the early Ashkenazim did, now we bring branches, Rashi doesn't give a number, aruchim, they're long, the yafim, they're beautiful, sheminkra mitzvah be'ayin yafa. So we do the mitzvah nicely. Okay, so Rashi here doesn't give us much detail, but he simply points out that our minhag is to take long ones, nice ones, more than one. That's what it sounds like from Rashi, and that we do the mitzvah nicer, ba'ayin yafa, generously. Now, the Gemara previously said that that's no good, huh?
If it's less than three tefachim, it's proof they don't take it from.
Yeah, right, correct. Meaning, right. If Rashi is correct, so then, right, it can't be the one from the Lulav. Or you could cut it. Either way. So, back to the Gemara. Amar Aibu. The Gemara quotes an Amor by the name of Aibu. We saw him. We saw him in the beginning of Psachim. Aibu is the father of Rav. Remember, in the very, very beginning of Psachim, I want to say Daf Dalid. Okay, you can check me up, but I may be right. So the so Aibu was the father of Rav. You remember Rav went to go visit his uncle. His uncle was Rabbi Chia, and his uncle said, how's my brother doing? And Rav had to deliver the unfortunate news that that Aibu passed away. So Amar Aibu. So I was standing in front of Rav Elazar Rav Tzadok, and a man brought an arava. Shakil, he took the arava, chavit, velo barach. So what did he do with the arava? So without translating, he chavit it twice, and he didn't make a bracha. Okay, so two things that are noteworthy. So number one, he didn't make a bracha. So on that second point, the Gemara comments, Kasavar minhag nevim hi. So obviously, it's a minhag. We don't make a bracha on a minhag, so he must be of the position. That's not a takana, it's not a rabbinic institution, we would be making a bracha, but rather it's a minhag, and that's why he didn't make a bracha. What else is noteworthy? He chavited it twice. Now what does that mean? So take a look at Rashi. Chavit chavit lashon ni anua. So Rashi says that chavit means he waved it. Meaning that the way Rashi understands it, the mitzvah of arava is to wave the arava. I would imagine similar to the way we wave the lulav. You'll probably notice on Hoshana Rabbah, that's not what most people do. Most people, they hit it on the ground. That's following the Rambam. The Rambam says that the word chavit here in the context of arava means to bang it, to hit it on the ground. So the so some people do both. Some people actually wave it and hit it on the ground, but probably more. Okay, that's the but anyway, two different understandings of what the word chavit means. Aibu v'chizkia b'nei barte derav the aisu arava lekame derav. So Aibu and Chizkia, who were the grandchildren of Rav. Brought the Rav in front of Rav, chavit chavit v'lo barich. So he too also chavited it twice. According to Rashi, he shook it, waved it. According to the Rambam, he hit it on the ground. Kasavra minig nevimu, and he didn't make a bracha. And again, Rav himself also is of the opinion that it is a minig nevim. Okay, before we go on, we are basically coming to an end, not totally, but basically coming to an end now regarding the mitzvah of a Rava. As it's done outside the base of Mikdash, and the Gemara, it seems to be the Gemara's conclusion is that it's not a Yeso Nevim, but rather it's a Minig Nevim, and we don't make a bracha. As we all know, that's what we hold. Meaning, no Shana Rabba, we take the Arava, we fulfill it, but what are we fulfilling? Minag Nevim. We're doing a Minag, and therefore we don't make a bracha. You'll take a look at the top Tosfos. It's long, it's lengthy. Tosfos over here, here is one of the Tosfosim. There are a couple of them in Shas. Here's one of the Tosfosim that has the discussion of, so what do we do when we say Hal on Rosh Chodesh? Or on the subsequent days of Pesach? As I pointed this out a couple times recently, that on Rosh Chodesh we say Hal, but that's not a mitzvah. That's not a rabbinic mitzvah. It's a minhag. It's simply a custom. We do it, obviously, because it's minhag Yisrael. It's a custom. Do we make a bracha on Hal? So I'm going to get two answers in this room. So the Sfarim amongst us are going to say, no, we don't make a bracha. And the Ashkenazim are going to say, yeah, we do make a bracha. So the Sfarim's position is much easier to defend. Meaning, Hal on Rosh Chodesh is a minhag, and therefore we don't make a bracha. We don't make a bracha on minhag, as the Gemara over here just concluded. Ashkenazim, we're going to have a harder time defending our position of making a bracha on the Chatzi Hala that we say in Rosh Chodesh. So it's don't worry. The defense of the Ashkenazi community is not a new phenomena. So Tosos already started defending the practice of the Ashkenazim when the Ashkenazi community was getting off the ground. So if you want to see a lengthy defense of the Minag Ashkenaz to make a bracha on Hala, so you see this Tosos over here where Tosos has that discussion. It's the Rabbeinu Tam, right? The grandson of Rashi. So he was the one who was strongly of the opinion that you do make a bracha on Hala, and he defended the position. And it's, as I pointed out, it's hard to defend, but when you're Rabbeinu Tam, even though it's hard to defend, but he knows Shas inside and out. So he defends it. Okay, so I'm obviously, it'd be nice to go through it right now, but I'm not going to go through the Tosos right now. But you can see Tosos for a defense of the Ashkenazim. Back to the Gemara. Amar Aibu. We're on Memdal Medbeis. Amar Aibu Havakayim. And the Kamei de Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. So we were telling episodes of Aibu and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadok. So the Gemara is going to go off topic. But the reason why is because the same Amarayim are in this discussion. Also Kamei Ugavra. And along comes a man. Nameless individual. Amar Le Karisi Islay. So he says, I have basically a city, right? Kfarim v'yoshveim. Okay, I own a small city. Okay, Karmia Islay, and in that city I happen to have, I have a karim, I have a vineyard, and vineyard may not be the right word. When you're growing olives, whatever. Okay, I have fields, and Zaysa Islay, and obviously I'm growing olives. V'asu b'nei karasa u'mekashkashim b'karmaya v'ochlim b'zaysa. And here's what's going on. Obviously, there's harvest that's going on. Now, my question is as follows. In the Shemitah year, so that my workers in the field are working, they're harvesting, and obviously Shemitah, so that means everything is Hefker, and what they're doing is that they're taking some olives home as payment for their work. And my question is, Arich o lo Arich? Appropriate or inappropriate? Now, he doesn't say asar mutter, which in of itself obviously is interesting. He's using the word arich, makes it sound like this is not a black and white issue, but this is a grayer issue. Okay? But he wants to know, is that appropriate? Now, the basic issue is, we've discussed this actually recently in the Gemara, is that you're not allowed to do commercial activity with perishvias. If he's paying his workers with perishvias, so that may, in fact, represent commercial activity with your perishvias. In fact, he's using the perishvias to settle a debt, meaning he owes the workers money, that's owed money, and the perishvias now are satisfying that obligation. Doesn't sound right. Amar le lo arich. So the answer was very simple. Not appropriate. Not good. Don't do that. So hava kashavik le va'azil. So the man said, okay, fine. In other words, asked, right, what a simple give and take. He asked the rabbi a question, the rabbi gave an answer. Okay, good. So, Amar, Kedo Havisi Dare Ba'ara Hada Memshanin. And Rav Elazar says, look, I've been living here for 40 years. V'lo chamite bar inish mahalech ba'archan detaknan kadein. I've never seen anyone as upright as him. He's a good guy. More than just a good guy, I'm understating it. But in other words, in the 40 years I've been living here, I haven't seen anyone as upstanding as him. Now he comes up with a very simple follow-up question. Okay, what do I do now? Now, this give and take is kind of hard to understand because I thought it was obvious. It should be obvious. But so he says to him as follows. He says, look, go into your own pocket, pay your workers with your own money, and as far as the olives, it's Shemitah, so let them fallow. In other words, let people collect them. Technically, he says, let them for the poor. The chashuche here is a reference to the poor. Okay, a little bit difficult to understand. It's Hefker. Anyone's entitled to it. Okay, but anyway, fine. That's the, simply put, you have to pay your workers out of your own pocket, and obviously the fruit are hefker. Okay, I don't fully follow that the follow up question and answer. I mean, what was he asking? What was his other option? Okay, but anyway, the Gemara now, as long as we are in this tangent, the Gemara stays on this tangent. V'keshkushke mishare. Now, what are these workers doing? So they're working the field. Wait a second. This is the Shemitah year. He was just asking questions about whether or not he could use the fruit as payment. So hold on a second. What does he have workers working the field during Shemitah? The pasuk says that you have to lay it fallow. Tishmatenu melakash kesh. Unetashta melasakel. You cannot work the ground during Shemitah. You can't. You can't dig in the field. You can't remove stones from the field. So the Gemara tells us, we're going to see this again together in the beginning of Moed Katan. So he says, well, there are two types of kashkushe, two types of work in the field. One type of work in the field that the Gemara refers to as, susume pile, to cover up the roots. In other words, the roots are exposed, and they're not in the soil, and the tree's going to die. So to save the trees, so that you're allowed to during Shemitah, meaning to prevent loss so that you can work. However, ivruye ilane aser, but anything where the tree is going to be fine, the tree will make it through the Shemitah year. But the trees, but you want to strengthen the tree, assist the tree, that you're not allowed to do. Okay, so in other words, a basic distinction the Gemara makes during the Shemitah year, working the field to improve the land, no. Working the field to save the tree, yes, that you're allowed to do. Susume pilishari, I'm sorry, Evri Ilani Asar, Susume pilishari. Fine. Amar Aibu Mishum Ravalaz Rabbit Sadok. Okay. And again, the Gemara is going off tangent on another topic. And again, the reason why is the same Amarayim. So, a person shouldn't walk more than three parsals. A parsa is 4 mil, 3 parsals is 12 mil. A person should not walk 12 mils to get to his destination is Shabbos. Meaning Friday afternoon, don't make a long trek to get to your destination. And by long, we mean 12 mil, about 12 kilometers approximately. Now, what's the issue? So it's funny. You asked me, I would have said the issue is you might not make it to your destination, and therefore you may be violating Shabbos. The Gemara introduces us to another consideration, and that is the following. You're coming in unannounced. You're coming in from more than three parsa away. So they don't know you're coming. Now, they made food for the number of people in their house. Okay, you're going to come in, and I didn't know he was coming. I know you were coming. And now what's going to happen is that it'll be embarrassing, and Rashi says it's actually going to be more than embarrassing. There'll be anger, right? And right, you'll be angry with them, they'll be angry with you. In other words, it'll create a situation of anger. And anger should always be avoided. The Gemara speaks very, very strongly against anger. And over here, it'll just lead to a tremendous amount of anger. The Gemara says, therefore, we can make the following distinction. If you're going into your own home, where you're comfortable, and it's very possible you're going to lose your temper in your own home, so that you shouldn't do. But if you're walking into a stranger's home, or to some innkeeper, that's okay. You'll know they're not expecting you at all. You're not going to get angry. Whatever you have, you'll make do. And so therefore, this halacha is limited to just walking to your own home. According to the second version, no difference. According to the second version, it's true when you're going to the inn, it's also true when you're going home as well. It makes no difference, meaning that when you come in unannounced, uninvited, and you're expecting food and they don't have it, so there's going to be anger. And Rav Kahana makes an admission. He says, I did this once, where I came in right before Shabbos. I traveled from a long distance, came right before Shabbos, and there was literally no food for me, not even the herring, if you can imagine. Mitzvah Zulav Ketza, the Gemara now, finishing up the discussion of the Mishnah, the mitzvah of lulav, Tini Tana Kama de Rav Nachman, the following Amora was saying over a brisa in front of Rav Nachman, and it went like this. Sojana gag ha'itztaba. So when he said over the brisa, he said gag, on the roof of the itztaba. We're talking about the harabais. The harabais was surrounded by benches. On the benches were like a patio, on top of the benches. And the way that this Amora said over the brisa is, they would drop the lulavim on top of the patio. So the Gemara says, that doesn't sound like a good idea. Amar le, top of memhei amad ala v'chili yavsham hutsarich. What? You leave the lulavim on top of the patio, sun's going to beat down the lulav, the sun's going to dry out the lulav. That's a terrible idea. Ela ema al gav ha'itzaba. So let's make a correction in the brisa. Not gag, back up one letter in the alphabet, Al gav ha'itztaba. That's the correct way to say the brisa. On the benches themselves, which is shaded by the patio. Amar Achva, Amar Rav Yehuda, Harabai Stav, Kafol Hayastav, Lifnim Istav. And by the way, the Gemara just gives us a quick picture of the Har HaBayis, which is two rows of benches are surrounding the entire Har HaBayis. One interior of the next. Ad kan. We are now going to begin the next Mishnah. Mitzvahs Arava Ketzan. The Mitzvah of Arava. The fourth parak is very systematic. Meaning what the first Mishnah did is the Mishnah spoke about the Mitzvah of Lulav, Arava, Halal, Simcha, etc., etc. And now the subsequent Mishnayos are going to go over every point with a little more detail. So now we're describing the Mitzvah of Arava. How was it actually performed in the Beis HaMikdash? So there was a place just below Yerushalayim. The name of the place was called Motza. They would go down there and they would collect the long Arava branches that grew down there. And they would lean it against the Mizbeach. This Mishnah certainly seems to speak to the question that we asked again and again. What is the Mitzvah of Arava? Sounds like from this Mishnah, the Mitzvah is Zekifa, to lean it against the Mizbeach. Okay? V'rashen kfufim al-gabei ha-Mizbeach. And it went to the top, where it actually leaned against the Mizbeach, and went over the Mizbeach. Tiku v'iri v'tiku, they blew the shofar. B'chol yom ha-kifin es ha-Mizbeach pam achas. Every day they would encircle the Mizbeach one time. V'omrim, and while encircling, what would they say? Ana Hashem Hoshiana, Ana Hashem Hatzlichana. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Aniva Ho Hoshiana. Now Rabbi Yehuda had a different version of what they would say. They would say, Aniva Ho Hoshiana. Okay. V'oso Hayom, Makivana Mizbeach Sheva Pamim. And on the last day of Sukkot, what we call Hoshana Rabbah, they would encircle the Mizbeach seven times. Okay. Pause here at the Mishnah for a moment. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would say, not say Ana Hashem Hashiana, but they would say Anivaho. What does that mean? Anivaho. So Ani would ostensibly means I, or me, but Vaho is not a word. It doesn't mean anything. So take a look at Rashi. I'm not going to go through the entire Rashi right now, but Rashi on the Mishnah. Rashi says, makes two points. Rashi, point number one. Anivaho bigamatria is Ana Hashem. Okay? Fine. That's point number one. But Rashi says, but it's not just that. It actually is Shem Hashem. Now, you'll go through the Rashi. I'm not going to go through the Rashi right now. But Rashi quotes Psukim from Parshas Beshalach. And basically, you'll use a code of 36 letters and you will find encrypted in the Psukim the Ani and the Vaho. So it's Aleph Nun Yud, Vav Hey Vav. So really what it is Shem Hashem. So basically what you're using are you're using two Shem Hashems. Shem Hashem that we're not familiar with. In other words, I don't know of any other context where we employ these names of the Ani and the Vaho. But those are Shem Hashem. And so we're basically saying, Hashem, please save us. Why these two particular names? So take a look at the Tosfos. Tosfos, Divra Amaskal Ani Vaho. So Tosfos over here, very interesting comment by Tosfos. He asked the question, why these particular names? If you look in the middle of the Tosfos, V'adayin tzarech l'tam lazeh, lama nishtanu shnei shemos halalu. So why are we using these two Shem Hashems of Ani Vaho? The Amrina Luhu Tfei Ma'achrina, any more than any other name. Mishum de Dashina Be'echa Rabasi. So Tosfos over here quotes a Medrash. Medrash from Echa. Kra dechzi be'echezkel v'ani besocha gola. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, am in the exile. Kal v'yachol, to the best of our understanding, we're not in exile alone. We're in exile with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in exile with us. He's exiled. Ukra dechziv b'yirmiyahu. And by the way, that's the Yani. And then, kra kziv b'yirmiyahu, v'hu asur b'zikim. And he is bound in chains. And now what we're going to do is that when we says, and he's bound in chain, that's a capital H. Meaning, it's not just a reference to us, it's a reference to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kavi Yachol. Hu ba'atzma v'hainu hoshana shi'oshia la'atzma. And therefore, on an interesting turn of events, on Hoshana Rabbah, what are we doing? We're asking not only that we are saved, but as to the best of our understanding, we're davening for a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he is saved as well. Okay. Now, it's a powerful idea. It's a beautiful idea. What's curious to me is that this is a tefillah that was said in the Beis Hamikdash when we had a mizbeach.
Right.
It was a forecast. It was a forecast for the future. I'm unclear about that. Meaning, I understand the basic idea. Just in the context of the Beis Hamikdash, it's hard for me to understand. So, but okay, I'm sure. I can't imagine. I'm the first one who thought about that. I'm sorry. Let's finish up the Mishnah together. Now, when leaving the Mizbeach, so what would they say? A tefillah was said also when leaving the Mizbeach. Yofi lecha Mizbeach. Yofi lecha Mizbeach. So they sang praises of the Mizbeach. Rabbi Lazar Amar, LaHashem ulecha Mizbeach. To you, Hashem, and to the Mizbeach. The Gemara, we'll see the Gemara tomorrow. The Gemara is going to say, I don't understand. That's hard to understand. Meaning, a praise to Hashem and to the Mizbeach in the same sentence. Okay, the Gemara tomorrow's daf is going to ask that question. LaHashem lecha Mizbeach, LaHashem lecha Mizbeach. K'maaseh b'chol kach maaseh b'Shabbos. Now, the way we just described it, it would be true during the week. It would also be true on Shabbos as well. However, with one notable difference. But obviously, we can't cut the Aravos on Shabbos. We would cut it before Shabbos and then put it in tubes, so they don't dry up. Right, golden tubes, correct. Rabbi Yochanan broke Omer Chavir Shal Dak Al Yemivian. They would bring palm branches, V'chofet Nosob Karka. Now they would, again, that word Chavata, shake it or bang it on the ground. In the context of the Mishnah, certainly sounds more like the Rambam. They would bang it on the ground. And that day was called the day of the banging of the palm branches. And then the Mishnah records what seems to be a very strange minog, and that would be that on the seventh day of Sukkot, after the conclusion of everyone fulfilling the mitzvah, so the grown-ups would take the esrogim away from the kids and the lulavim away from the kid, the esrogim and the lulavim away from the kids, and eat the esrog. And it is a strange custom. And what does that speak to? I'm not totally sure as of yet. I'll do a little bit of more research. But ad kan divrei ha-mishnah. Okay, well, tomorrow we'll start with the Gemara.